There we are recording. We're in Bob Mortimer's office in his house. We're overlooking the Comox Valley. So, the background of where we are. I just kind of to get a kind of idea of your background and stuff. I just kind of gathered some general introductory questions, kind of about your life, I suppose.
Okay.
If that was all right. So I was curious, you were born in Canada, I'm assuming?
Born in Vancouver.
Okay.
Raised there, went to high school there.
Yeah. What year were you born in?
1932.
Okay.
That's a long time ago.
The same year as my grandma.
Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah, okay. And how old were you when you enlisted?
Well, I was, I enlisted in the auxiliary first. I was in Air Cadets there too, but I was able to get an arrangement whereby some of us, about half a dozen of us Air Cadets, were sort of seconded to the 442 Squadron Auxiliary Squadron in Vancouver to just sort of go out there and learn things on the job as much as they would let us do and so on, helping refuel airplanes, start airplanes, tow airplanes, park airplanes, wow. And that sort of thing.
And
so
how old
I was 17 when I joined.
Wow, that's a great experience.
I joined the reserve then as an airman after I'd been there as an air cadet for a couple of years. So, and then I joined the regular force. I was 18 and a half, I guess, 19, yeah.
Wow. That's cool. So at that age, I guess that was a real step advantage of being able to have experience around planes.
That's
prior
right.
To
yeah.
Going into the Air Force.
Yeah, and I'd had the flying scholarship with the Air Cadets at that time, but they had just started giving out flying training to Air Cadets. And at that time, they were only got about 26 hours on it. They didn't have enough for a private license. They wouldn't give it. But anyhow, that was great. So I had that, and then I... got my private license on my own hook afterwards,
yeah.
And so when I joined the RCF as a flight cadet, I had a little bit of flight experience, so that was helpful.
Yeah,
as I went through the training mode.
Your first transitioning from cadets to the RCAF, how would you describe the difference? Was it a lot stricter?
Well, it was a lot more challenging because there was a lot of things that were being thrown at us and expecting of us to do and so on. Went through the training mill and the number of tasks and so on to vet us out so that when we went to the first manning depot in London, Ontario, and I can't remember how many weeks we were there. It must have been about 8 weeks or something. So, but at the end of that time, a number of the young guys didn't make it.
Hmm.
So those of us that were lucky enough, we made it, and then we went off to do our flying training at Centralia in Ontario.
Wow. And so you were from a different part of the country. How did being transferred over there affect your relationship with, you know, family, friends, and all that?
Oh, it was no problem. It was a bunch of guys, as you probably recognize from university,
yeah.
You know, everybody's doing the same thing, meeting the same challenges, working their butts off to...
So you meet some friends.
You meet friends, you meet guys from other parts of the country,
yeah.
Of course, and you sort of end up in we were billeted in H huts, as they call them out there, and they're big barracks, and we're on double-deck bunks. And there was 24 of us in a one wing or something. I don't know, so,
Wow! What kind of planes did you guys train on?
On the Harvard.
Okay.
Harvard.
That's a Texan right there, right?
Yeah, it's a Harvard.
It's a Harvard.
Yeah.
Do they have two names? A Harvard Texan or?
Well, the Texan was the American version.
Ah, I see. Okay.
Yeah. So those pictures are well faded, and I haven't. Had a chance to replace and probably won't bother to do it.
Yeah.
So we trained on the Harvard till we got our wings.
And were you in the front seat in those planes?
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Not all the time. Sometimes you were in the back seat and then doing instruments.
Yeah.
But we're in the front seat to learn how to fly and how to take off and land yourself and do aerobatics and spins and stalls and all that sort of stuff.
Cool.
Yeah.
It must have been pretty exciting.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. It was really good.
So, when you were applying, did you apply to become a fighter pilot originally?
Or? Well, I wanted to be, and I put that in as my choice, and fortunately, I was selected to do that. Yeah.
And it's pretty difficult to get into that, I suppose, out of.
Well, it depended at the time, as it always does, you know, on supply and demand, how many vacancies there were for fighter pilots and other pilots, and the graduating class of pilots came along, so they sort of divided them up, and away they went.
Interesting. So, you joined the cadets around 1949, in that range, and then...
Yeah.
And then the Air Force would have been 50-51.
1951 was got on the train to go back east.
Okay.
To begin the training.
And so... the 1st Canadian Air Division, from my understanding, was the first part of it was shipped over to Europe in 1953.
There was actually part of it was there before then, in 1952, I think, maybe 1951. The first segment went to England, into North Lufferman. Okay, and then subsequently the 2-wing, then 3-wing, and then 4-wing.
And which wing were you eventually assigned to?
4-wing.
Okay.
So we were the last ones to go across, and we arrived there in September 1953.
Okay. Did you take part in Operation Leapfrog?
Yep.
Okay. So you flew to Greenland, then Iceland, Scotland, then down?
Right.
Oh, interesting. That must have been quite the journey.
Yeah, it was indeed, yeah. So it was 54 airplanes all going the same direction, same day. Yeah.
Wow. Okay. So what were your feelings kind of on the way to Europe? Were you like excited or nervous?
Oh, yeah.
Or?
We were looking forward to it.
Yeah.
We were
anxious
to get over there. Yeah.
Yeah. I guess, was the idea that there would be a lot of fun things to do on leisure time off and stuff like that, explore cities. And...
Well, yeah. Well, we were expecting that we would have some time off to explore and so on. Yeah.
Oh, cool. Yeah. When you were on leave, how were you perceived by the local people? Like, how did they see you? What'd you say?
Well, I don't know. I don't think we bothered them. They didn't bother us. So, we didn't mix all that much when we were, groups of us together. We obviously stuck pretty well together. But no, that was fine. The local people around the base there were very... friendly and accepting, and we used the local guest houses and whatever for dinner and beers and stuff.
And was this Zweibrücken that you were at?
Or? No, it was Baden, Solingen.
Okay, interesting. When you were over there, did you find discipline was different at all from at home?
No, I don't think so.
Same, okay. Yeah. I guess at that time, the main reason, for my understanding, of sending all our planes over there was to counter the threat posed by the Eastern Bloc. When you were flying, did you feel like there was a conflict kind of imminent? Or?
No, I didn't think that it was necessarily going to happen. We thought that we were there as part of the deterrent force, and the deterrence was working.
Mm-hmm.
So that was fine. And there was some times when things got a little more exciting, like when the Hungarian Revolution took place in 1956. Then there was some pretty sort of increased vigilance and so on, the expectations, but it all worked out okay.
Yeah.
But we were, we were going over, and the forces were building over there, the Western forces, in order to counter the Soviets and the Eastern Bloc. And we were training, and they were training the other side too, I guess.
how did the guys flying the F-86s, how did you guys feel you would do if you were to square up against the Russian pilots?
Well, we figured we had our training, and we'd do what we could as much as we were able. Yeah.
Yeah. So you were pretty, morale was pretty high, would you say?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Absolutely, yeah.
Okay. I guess it was a pretty cutting-edge plane, from my understanding, the Canadian version, especially with the Orenda engine.
Yeah, it was a good airplane in the in the various types over there, it was very good.
Yeah.
So it was one of those. So we had good equipment and so on, which is very different to the day's situation with trying to get a new fighter airplane for the RCAF.
Mm.
If you've been reading much about that at all, as the thing has gone on, the saga has gone on and continues to go on and keeps getting delayed and postponed and whatever.
I guess those were the golden days, aren't they? Yeah.
They were, yeah. I mean, we were just young guys, fighter pilots and so on, so we didn't have much in the way of knowledge or understanding of politics and diplomacy and all the rest of the stuff that was going on.
Yeah.
So we were doing our duty.
You just got to fly the planes.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah.
So other people, but obviously, at that time, Canada had jumped in to become one of the founding countries of NATO. And committed themselves to, army and air force in Europe and navy and on the Atlantic, primarily. So we're a very significant partner in NATO at that time.
Mm. Yeah, I guess and the plane itself was one of the most advanced in the world, and Canada had the best version of it at the time. So flying that plane. I mean, was there anything about it that you didn't like, or was it pretty good all around, would you say?
I don't remember anything in particular that I didn't like about it, no. It was pretty good.
Was the seat comfortable, for example?
Yeah, everybody said, how could you fit inside one? But for me, it was fine.
Okay.
The Sabre was quite comfortable for us, the space and comfort and so on.
How did you find visibility?
Oh, it was good. Yeah, it was good.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we had good, bubble cockpit on the top of the thing.
Yeah. I was going to say it looks like the classic kind of... Yeah.
So there's a real faded picture of me putting on...
That's you beside the...
The last straps putting on my parachute to go up and fly.
Wow. When would that have been, that picture there?
Oh, about 1956.
In Germany?
Yep.
Wow. That's really cool.
So I have other pictures, but I don't have them very well organized or sorted.
Yeah.
But, so it was good. We would, of course, did a few trips, deployments, not as much as they did later on. We would go down to... Rabat in Morocco for our gunnery training.
Mm.
And our squadron, we deployed to Greece in about 1954, I guess, for an exercise there. And it was pretty, pretty rudimentary in so far as communications and radar and so on was concerned at that time.
Yeah.
But, we went down and the Greeks hosted us at their base outside of Athens. And we flew a few trips and then came back.
You got to travel quite a lot then over there.
Well, not that much with an actual flying. We went down to Morocco four times and over to the UK sometimes and that. But the more extensive deployments came a little later when there was more places going. And the fighters were going down to Dechi. And there was maybe some greater some increased firing ranges and so on later on in Europe itself in Germany.
Mm. Okay. Mm-hmm. What training did you do in Germany itself? So the gunnery practice was in Morocco.
Yeah.
When you were in Germany, was it, did you not fire your guns at all, or was it?
No, we didn't, no.
Okay, so a lot of acrobatics, that kind of
no,
stuff?
No, we were up and doing formation stuff, and flights, one flight against another, and we had radar there, the radar operated by Canadians, which gave us the coverage and from the ground, And so we would go up and deploy and in the air, go to different points, and then would be vectored in by the radar to attack the other sections and so on.
Mm. Did you have mock dogfights between?
Oh yeah.
Oh, that must have been really fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. Was it kind of a bit competitive in terms of, like, you know, when you get back to base and you're talking with
everyone? Oh yeah, sure. There was lots of claims and so on. And of course we had cinning cameras to take pictures of the target in front of you, assuming you had them in your sights.
Mm.
And so that did quite a lot of that. So
yeah. So a lot of improving on skills and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Okay. When you were down in Morocco, how many times did you go to Morocco?
Four times. Let's see what we have here.
And was Morocco the place where all 1st Canadian Air Division planes went for gunnery practice?
At that time, yes.
In the 53, 54, 55?
Right, that's right, yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. So, where are we here? And so that's all in Morocco. Yes, we did.
Did you look forward to those trips to Morocco?
Oh, yeah.
It was
fun,
huh?
Good. So we did lots of quarter attacks and that sort of thing. High level, low level navigation, rendezvous exercises. And that was all. Yeah. Flew, when we went down to Morocco, we flew via Istres, which is France. What was the name of the city? Can't remember.
Marseille, maybe?
Yeah, that's right.
So Istres was the military base outside Marseille?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so there were various operations that they were created that we would participate in, and that would be involved in scrambling and intercepting and so on.
Speaking of scrambling, if you were given like an emergency call, how quickly could you and your flight be up in the air?
Well, if we were pulling an alert at the end of the runway, we could get up very quickly, a couple of minutes.
Mm.
But we weren't always having alerts there, and it started a little after we got there. And then the three squadrons on each base would take turns in doing it. And of course we were day fighters, so we were just doing standby during the day flight hours. So yeah. Anyway, there was fly pass too, ceremonial fly pass from time to time.
Mm.
Yeah.
Another thing I was really curious about is, did the pilots share planes, or was your plane your plane?
Yeah. We didn't have our own airplanes and only flew it at all.
Okay.
Because you know, obviously there's maintenance cycles to go through and unserviceabilities fixed and so on.
So you could be in a different plane every time.
Yeah, you know, when we came across in Leapfrog, we all had our own airplanes and the preparation for it and the training and exercising for it, and then we flew them across. And I always sort of thought of those airplanes as, or at least I did.
As your own.
So the one is my own.
Now, going between planes, even if it was the same Mark Sabre, I don't have experience in this, but I mean, like, I know cars, for example, like, it could be the same kind of car, but they can feel different. Did the planes, if it was the same, could you tell going back and forth
that they felt different? A little bit, yeah. Not a great deal, but yeah. Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, so I was on Sabres before I went across to Germany in Bagotville for a year.
Okay. Is that Quebec?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And we would go down to the factory and pick up a brand new airplane and fly it back to Bagotville. So that's when I got christened with my airplane to fly across the Atlantic. So, yeah. So we did a lot of training while we got more airplanes and more pilots came aboard. And so we built up the squadron during that year.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And what, so
there's wow. me and my airplane.
Wow. How old would you have been in this picture?
Oh, 19 or 20.
That's so young, huh?
Yeah. How old are you?
I'm 23.
Okay.
Yeah. That's amazing to have flown a plane like that at that age.
Yeah.
Wow. Did you feel lucky?
Oh, yeah. 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 Sure did, yeah. Yeah.
I think that's a lot of young boys' dream is to fly a fighter plane.
Yeah, we certainly did in our day. Yeah. I don't know if it still do or not. Yeah. Yeah, so it was a great time over there.
Yeah, it was a fun time.
Yeah, it certainly was, yeah. And of course made friends that have lasted forever, you know, for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
With the people.
A real kind of brothers in arms kind of thing, huh?
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
And of course, as we get to the age we're at now, we're starting to lose them.
Mm.
We have been starting to lose them for some time now.
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah, so.
When you were over in Baden-Solingen, were you quartered on base or?
Well, yeah, I was over there. I went over as a single guy, and we had quarters, nice single rooms, quarters
okay.
over there, right in the Black Forest.
Oh, wow.
Big trees there outside the officer's mess and so on, so that was fine.
Yeah.
And I got married while I was over there, and then we lived on the economy for the first while, and then on into married quarters there.
Okay.
So, yeah.
How did you meet your wife?
High school.
Oh, wow. High school sweetheart. Yeah. So, when you were living on the economy, my understanding is that it was like the government gave a certain amount of money for a house, and then you paid the rest?
Yeah. I can't remember what exactly it was, but yeah, there was some subsidizing, but it was... wasn't too bad over there at that time.
Yeah.
Okay, because, you know, things were still very basic in Germany at that time because the war hadn't been over that long.
No, yeah.
And sort of the farmers were out growing their crops there, of course, and they had pretty old equipment, you know, honey wagons and fertilizer tank and other things like that. There wasn't a modern big machinery like there is today.
Interesting, but, yeah. I'm surprised. I thought Hitler tried to do his best to kind of mechanize Germany, but I guess he did it with the armor and all that. But.
Well, yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, I don't think there was... Well, it certainly wasn't around our place where we were.
Yeah.
Much in the way of evidence of modern agricultural equipment at all.
And so the house you lived in, was it rented off of a German family or something like that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nice house?
Oh, it was pretty nice. It was pretty basic. We just had a room with a bed and a bit of a sitting area, and the kitchen was shared with a couple other tenants there, not military, but a couple of others, and that sort of thing. So, I had to share the kitchen, and we had the bathtub, and of course the potty was down the hall. So things were pretty basic.
Yeah. Did you prefer living there or on married quarters?
Well, I think it was better when we got back to the base on married quarters because everything was then accessible there, you know.
And more private?
Yeah, the stores and everything else, the exchange and so on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the base, was it pretty like self-sufficient if you just wanted to stay on the base? Like, could you have survived like that?
Oh, yeah. No, it was lots of things to do. And,
yeah, okay. I'm trying to picture what it would have been like to have been there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right,
yeah.
So how old were you when you got married?
23.
Okay. Yeah. And so that would have been 1955 then?
Right.
Yeah, okay. Wow. And when did you come back from Germany?
We came back in December of 56.
Okay. So you had quite a long time over there.
Yeah, I was there for three months or so.
Yeah. Did you pick up any German while you were there?
Not very much. Yeah. Not very much.
No. I guess no need.
No, I didn't really need to.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there was too many other things going on to try and learn another language.
Yeah.
Although some people did a good job of doing that, you know, but get by in the Gasthaus when you went for dinner or whatever.
I'd be a bit. That's cool. So you look back on that time overseas with fond memories then?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Would you consider it like a golden moment in your life?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. That's my impression from talking with Sid and John as well, is that it was a really great experience.
Oh, it was. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. It's something that I guess, you know, it's part of a time in history that's gone now, and no one will experience that again.
Not the same, quite the same way, no.
Huh.
Yeah.
And just the timing, like right after the war, like it's, what an experience that must have been.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Over there, for sure.
I guess, and at the time when you're in these things, you never really, well, not to say you don't appreciate it, but like when you're in a certain situation, you don't realize maybe how special it is till after.
That's right. Absolutely. Yeah. Sure.
So, yeah. That's flying fighter planes and
yeah.
In Germany, like that's amazing.
Great stuff.
Yeah. Wow. Is there anything you want to say about the Sabre? Any other things that you feel could have been touched on?
No, it was a fantastic airplane. That was great.
Yeah.
And of course, you've probably heard, and I'm sure Sid has told you, if you hear from other people, about the Sabre that has come back here to be here for special occasions, you know, that's owned by Americans down south.
I don't know about that plane.
Yeah.
Is it? I know, I've heard of Hawk 1.
Yeah, well, Hawk 1 is the one that's in Canada that was rebuilt by Vintage Wings and so on.
Right.
Yeah. And it was out here, too. In fact, that's me standing in front of it there. With the,
right there?
Yeah, with the Hawk symbol on the side of the Sabre.
Yeah.
Yes.
It looks small in other pictures, but when you're standing next to it, it makes you realize that it is an airplane. It's,
well, it is, yeah.
It's a fair size.
Sure, yeah.
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 So, how did you find the armament? Was it if you'd had to go up against enemy aircraft, do you think it was enough?
Well, it was 6 machine guns at the time, and the sighting system wasn't the most modern, but it did have a radar distance ranging gun sight. So it was okay. And we went down and tried our best to get as good as we could do on shooting at the drogue out over the ocean in Morocco. And so, you know, gradually the scores would get a little better as we moved on, but we weren't, getting really big Top Gun numbers, but it was all right.
Yeah,
we were doing as well as we thought we could. Yeah.
Yeah. The Sabre, from it kind of seems to me like it's a combination of a new world of jet propulsion and then like a World War II influence of 650 caliber machine gun armament. Like that was a common armament for a lot of World War II aircraft, American ones, I guess, in particular.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then later on, did they add any other kind of armament to the...
Not to the Sabre, no.
Not to the Sabre.
Not to the Sabre, yeah, yeah, for sure.
Did you fly CF-104s as well?
No.
So after you finished with the Sabre, what did you do?
I became an instructor pilot, teaching people how to fly.
Okay.
In the harbors. Penhold, Alberta, and then in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan.
And you retired in the late 80s, was that right?
88, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So was it, until that point, had you been doing a lot of instructing?
Yeah, I did. I guess I was involved in instructing for four or five years. So I was instructing on Harvard and also on expediters, and I was instructing instructors how to become instructors
too. So you were the go-to guy.
Well, you know, it was called the Flying Instructor School.
Yeah.
So did that. Yeah.
Hmm. Very cool. Is there anything else you want to add about the whole experience in Europe, in the first Air Division?
Gotta think of it, well, if there's anything that's really interesting or not. But no, it was a good time there. We had leave, and we would go down to Garmisch-Partenkirchen down in Bavaria and ski down there.
Oh.
And go on. They had some nice amenities for us. We were able to get onto the French Air Force the ski school down in their Alps, and some of us were able to get on that course for a week or two.
Hmm.
So that was great too.
Yeah.
So, and then we would, you know, we traveled over Europe and went over the UK on leave and so on, Holland and Belgium and the rest of the sort of stuff. So we got around a fair bit. Yeah.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
Well, this paper I'm writing is, I think I've got a fair amount of information to kind of put into it now. Yeah.
Okay. Let me just have a look here.
Sure.
John or Sid may have mentioned that we've been having the SPADS organization.
Yeah.
And we've been we started in 1988, first time we got the group together, okay? Mm. Which was, you know, it was the last Sabre squadron was active over in Europe in 1962.
Wow.
So it was quite a while later before you guys got around to organizing. So anyhow, so since then we've had a reunion every second year.
Okay.
So, you know, it was 88, 98, 08, 18. So we've been doing it for 30 years now.
Yeah, so 15 meetings.
Yeah.
Wow.
So we got one more coming up in 2020, hopefully.
Montreal, I heard?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hopefully, if we can make that one.
Yeah.
So I just got a really bad old photo albums that might give you some idea.
Are these your personal picture?
Yeah.
Wow.
So that's sort of looking at the dispersal there.
This is the base.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah,
so that's the Black Forest?
Yeah, well, yeah, that's a little bit of it.
Yeah. China. Not the whole thing.
No. So, yeah, so that was a gateway to the...
Is this you?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Wow. Cool.
Yeah. I don't know what else we got here, but...
Wow, such a neat plane.
That's their squadron. So, and then of course there was times when.
It's a skiing.
Yeah, that was down in Garmisch.
Yeah. This was a military.
That's script.
Yeah.
Okay, so that was what we used with the Americans,
and
our own base. So. But, this was a car that I had, which is another.
Oh, you had that car?
Yeah.
Wow. What year was it? Do you remember?
I don't know, but the 30s, sort of before the war.
And it survived the war?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
So it was quite an impressive looking thing. But,
yeah.
So I don't know.
It's amazing anything like that managed to survive in Germany.
Well, yeah, indeed. And it was in very good shape, but it had some problems too, and I finally got rid of it because the clutch was gone, and there was just no way we were going to get another piece apart. Yeah, this is the barrack blocks that we lived in over there.
Ah. So these are all individual rooms.
Right, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so that was...
There must have been a real sense of camaraderie.
Oh, it was indeed, yeah, for sure. So this is just some of the guys killing time, playing cards outside. Wow. Waiting for their turn to go climb.
Yeah.
We even had a local sort of survival skit for a few days up in the local yeah. This was the inside sort of little fountain area of our officers' mess there.
Oh, that's pretty nice.
Yeah. Yeah. And there was party time at the officers' mess. Yes. Yeah, so this is when we all went to brush cuts. This was me. This was a very close friend who was killed with the aerobatic team in Germany.
Mm-hmm.
For the Skylancers. That picture up there is the aerobatic team that they regularly had. Okay, yeah, so this is down in Urbat. Downtown.
Oh wow, that actually looks good. This part
does. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, there were some parts that were really nice, you know. But you get into the Medina or the...
Yeah.
It's not quite the same. And then this is what we were doing. This was counting the flags. This is the flag that was towed by a drogue airplane. And
counting the bullet holes.
Counting the bullet holes in each aircraft in the flight had bullets that were painted and the tip was red, blue, or...
Oh, and it would actually leave the residue.
Leave a mark, yeah.
Ah, so you could tell
who got the score and who didn't.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, so there's some of the guys arming up the airplane there.
Those are the 350 cals on those.
Yeah, yeah, right, yeah. So that was the tower down there.
Yeah, it's a different world.
Yeah. So, anyway. Some beach time.
Yeah, nice.
Guys horsing around.
Is this in Rabat or?
Yeah.
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 Wow. Was it someone's wife or?
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. She just walked in front of the camera. So this was when we went to Greece.
Oh, wow.
The view from the Acropolis, September 54.
It must have been hot in September, too.
Yeah.
Were these pictures that you took then?
Yeah.
From your airplane?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, cool.
And this was our Operation Keystone was the name of the exercise when we deployed down to Athens. So we're doing a little bit of tourist stuff in downtown Athens.
Did your wife come with you at that time?
No, I wasn't married at that time.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh, this was 54.
Yeah.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. So. Anyhow.
Yeah. That's really neat. Yeah. It's neat to see pictures. It really puts like a
puts some sort of reference for you.
A background, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, for sure. This was the earlier one. This was a farewell fly past in Ottawa in August of 1953.
That's pretty impressive.
Before we went overseas, yeah. So, Anyhow, there we go.
Yeah. Oh, thank you for showing me. That's really cool.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
I took pictures over there. They slides. Mm-hmm. So I've got boxes of slides in there, and I've got one of the things to have many to do list is to get them all digitized.
Ah.
So
yeah.
I can
organize them.
Preserve them, or yeah, organize.
Yeah, yeah.
So I don't know whether I'll be able to do that or not, because it's a big job. But it's, you know, it's nice to have those slides, because they're really
The memories.
Yeah, for sure.
It's interesting. Looking at a picture, I always try to imagine, like, you know, at that moment, like how it was, and like, you know, watching, like, you know, the guys playing chess, for example. Like,
you know,
it's really cool seeing those old pictures.
So it was great.
I wish I could have seen it.
Yeah, I'm sure you did.
Yeah.
That's good.
Well, thank you for everything. And
you're welcome. Did you get some reading material from some people?
John England gave me a book about air crews, and then I rented a few books from the library as well, about like the Sabre and the First Canadian Air Division, all that. And
okay.
So I'm kind of trying to figure out how I'm gonna direct this paper, like what I'm gonna write about exactly.
Yeah.
But I think it'll be good to just incorporate the human side of things. You know, having talked to you guys and like hearing what you had to say, because I didn't know whether, you know, going over to Europe was a punishment or a privilege, and then hearing now, talking to you guys, like, it was really cool to go over there.
Yeah, it was indeed, for sure.
So that's why it's really neat to actually talk to you guys and hear that. Yeah.
Good.
Hearing the opinions.
The Bible about the Sabre, of course, is
that one,
that
right
book
there.
You've seen that one?
Sid was telling me all about that book.
Yeah.
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 Yeah, he was going on about it. Yeah. Yeah.
So it's good.
Yeah.
Then there's some other stuff too. There's a guy, one of the Sabre pilots there, by the name of Chick Childerhouse, whether you've heard of him or not, but he wrote a couple of novels.
Okay.
And, he's just one of us, but he seemed to have a knack for
writing. Yeah,
so this is just a fictitious thing about, you know, about a Sabre pilot over in Europe.
Oh, that's cool.
And it's called Splash One Tiger, referring to a air-to-air mock combat sort of thing and shooting down the other guys. So, yeah.
He had a panache for writing.
Yeah, he did. Yeah.
That's really neat. Well, I guess I'll turn this thing off. Okay. No.